This Rock Talk podcast recording is an interview and opinion product that is the property of rocksubculture.com, all rights reserved. Rocksubculture.com is not responsible for any statements or opinions expressed by the guests of this program. Welcome to Rock Talk, the official podcast for rocksubculture.com. Each podcast features interviews with special guests to discuss all aspects of popular music. Rocksubculture.com travels the globe to experience, review, and archive live concert events. Interview those involved in producing and performing a variety of genres of popular rock music, as well as find and learn about related studio and stage use artifacts and memorabilia. Now, let's join our host, Jason DeBoard.
Welcome to the program. I'd like to thank my guest for coming on. It's Paul Robb from Information Society. Welcome.
My pleasure.
So I have some questions for you today. It's an honor for me to talk to you. I'm a huge fan of the band, and it's a little bit surreal for me. But let's start by talking about the concert tomorrow night at King King. Can you tell us a little bit about that show?
This was a show that came up sort of at the last minute. We were preparing and are right now in rehearsals for doing a series of dates in South America.
Uh-huh.
And we didn't really have any intention of doing any shows in the States for a variety of reasons, but we are rehearsing in L.A., which is where I live, and the opportunity to do the show came up, and it's a nice place, and it gives us an opportunity to sort of polish the show, and it gives an opportunity for all our friends and family to kind of hang out and see a show which none of them have done for years and years and years and years.
Oh, cool.
So it's going to be kind of a, it's going to be like playing records in your dad's rec room, I think.
Okay, cool. So, yeah, I'm in Northern California, so I'm coming down for it. So I'm really looking forward to
There's a whole caravan of people coming down from NoCal.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
So you guys are going to do some gigs in Brazil this month, right?
That's correct, yeah.
So what do you attribute kind of, I know you're really popular in a lot of other countries like, you know, Brazil, Spain, South America, Mexico, Scandinavia. Do you have any idea of kind of how that came about?
No, it's funny because I just got done not answering that question for a newspaper writer in Brazil, because that's always the first question they ask us is, you know, to what do you attribute your you know, big fan, you know, your big success in this country or that country? And the answer is, we have no clue. Never have. I mean, I have a few little pet theories that are kind of more nerdy than entertaining, but, and, you know, in a nutshell, I theorized once, I don't know if I still believe this, but that, you know, one of our formulas, you know, back in the day for writing was that we would take urban beats and then we would sort of bolt on very romantic or even new romantic, if you remember that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Songs onto the top of those urban beats. And I think that, you know, it's possible that those romantic Latin chords that are at the heart of so many of our hits might be one of the reasons, at least for the, you know, for the South America Spain connection,
right?
In terms of Japan and you know, these other outlier markets, Scandinavia, who knows?
Yeah,
you know, whereas in England, you know, places, the UK, places like that, they're more like, yeah, we have Erasure and Depeche Mode, we don't really need you people.
Yeah.
You know, you take it where you can get it.
Yeah, interesting. So, you know, some people might not know, but you've gone on, you know, after the band broke up in the early 90s, you went on to become a really successful in the film industry and television and commercial scoring, various things. Do you feel like you've got some, maybe you're sort of prescient and going into this electronic music? Because I know back in the 80s, it wasn't as respected. And now, you know, it's sort of seen in a totally different light. I mean, kind of what are your thoughts on that?
Excuse me. you know, I'd like to say that we were prescient and that we had a master plan all along and and everything like that. But really, we just were attracted to certain kinds of music, mostly because we were contrarian.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't want to play, you know, garage punk music. Although we did feel like we came from a punk aesthetic.
Right.
But we just used synthesizers instead of guitars.
Right, right.
But honestly, that was just the kind of music that we were attracted to ourselves in our own lives. It was the soundtrack to our lives. And so that was, of course, the kind of music that we aspired to create, you know, when we wanted to make music.
Right.
And it's really as simple as that.
Yeah.
There was no grand plan. There was no, you know, we used to make a lot of noise about, you know, synthesizers are the future of music and, you know, rock is dead and things like that. But, you know, we weren't that serious about it. It was more just to rile the feathers of the music scene in Minneapolis more than anything else.
Yeah. And kind of along...
That's the long answer. The short answer is that's the music we love.
Yeah. And kind of along those lines also, you know, you guys kind of celebrate, you know, earlier in your music, it was kind of a geek culture celebration. And, you know, back in those days, it wasn't cool to be a geek, but now it's like, you know, the Big Bang Theory is like the number one comedy on television.
I know.
And there's Comic-Con and it's...
It rings true too.
But, yeah.
Yeah, no, you're correct. And I think I'd like to take credit for creating part of that cultural meme. But it's probably more likely to say that we were just sort of riding a cultural wave at the beginning of that process,
mm-hmm.
of celebrating the geek and celebrating the nerdy and celebrating the technical and you know, twitchy little aspects of things.
Mm-hmm.
And we were just maybe earlier on the scene than popular culture, but you know, there's a lot of things when I look back and that we were way into, that we were way obsessed with, that seems very, very silly and unbelievably not prescient now. So,
yeah.
You know, it cuts both ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So back in the 80s, what kind of music were you listening to as you guys were getting started that kind of inspired you musically?
Well, it was a very diverse list of groups, and I think that we were very privileged to grow up at the, you know, right at the zenith of new wave,
mm-hmm.
Which was, you know, probably the most, you know, creative explosion of musical expression that I don't even know since when, maybe since ever.
Yeah.
And so, you know, for us, we were listening to things as diverse as, you know, the B-52s and Gary Numan, Devo, Soul Sonic Force, Fat, you know, all the English electronic music.
Right.
Mute Records and Yellow, The Residents, all the no-wave bands out of New York. We idolized them, like DNA and Lydia Lunch and, you know, basically anything that wasn't on the radio was great,
right,
to us.
Right.
And the weirder it was, the better we liked it.
Yeah.
And if you listen to our early music, it was extremely strange.
So yeah.
It wasn't until later that we kind of learned the craft of pop songwriting and then began to practice that craft.
Yeah. So when you came up with the song "What's on Your Mind," did you know it was going to be a hit, and did you know it was going to be that big of a hit? You know,
no, not at all. As a matter of fact, when I first wrote "What's on Your Mind," it was about a 12-minute instrumental jam, and as most of our music was at that stage,
uh-huh.
and it was a process of wrangling that jam into a song with a hook came very, very slowly. As a matter of fact, the chorus hook of that song was actually the second chorus that I had written for the song. There was a different chorus that was originally on there at first, which people can find if they search hard enough on the internet. So it was a crafted thing that we, it took me a long time to figure out how to write pop songs.
Yeah. So was
and that
it,
song was no exception.
Yeah. So was it, what was it like for you to have that just immediate success where you're all over MTV and, you know, on the radio and, because you guys have been together for a while.
What seems like immediate success to the audience actually was the culmination of many years of hard work and,
right.
and not having success.
Yeah.
But I will admit that we became very popular very quickly. And, I can say we dodged most of the major demons that, like everyone else, or mm-hmm. a lot of other people that get very popular very fast. None
right.
of us became druggies or alcoholics or self-destructive in any other way.
Right.
Any of those things. But, we had our ups and downs. It was like riding a roller coaster, and hanging on was really the first priority.
Mm-hmm.
And trying to drive the thing was the second priority.
Right.
So there wasn't much planning going on. But bottom line is, it was a great experience.
Yeah.
Right. It was, and it was a time that I don't know that that's going to happen again, just because of the way media works these days. It's very fragmented. And it's hard for anyone to break through the substrate of chatter and noise that just exists at all times now.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. There's so many channels now, with YouTube, and everything's electronic download music. And that's the thing, is how do people break out? And then also, even big artists, how do they maintain relevancy and keep on people's radar?
Yeah. I do not envy, an up and coming artist of today.
Yeah. So kind of what is your overall summary view of how the music industry's changed, predominantly due to just technology?
Is there a music industry anymore? I don't know. There's a media industry. Mm-hmm. You can get a record deal if you get a TV show first.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I'm not so sure. But I will say I'm not a huge, I'm not uncritical of the flattening of the media landscape or of the landscape of work in general.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's great because anybody can get their song up on iTunes now, but, as as the promotions guy at Warner Brothers used to say in the 80s, that and a quarter will get you a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
Access to distribution channels used to seem like holy grail, but now people realize it doesn't matter at all. What matters is what the new $10 buzzword of this decade, curatorial aspects of things.
Mm-hmm.
That's why DJs are the new superstars, not because they really do anything as performers, but because they are the curatorial gatekeepers for what people think is cool and what isn't. And that role used to be filled by other people, and still is filled by a variety of people. But, there's a lot of aspects of my discovery of music when I was a young person that's just not available to young people today.
Mm-hmm.
Browsing in a record store and just discovering things. Or, college radio still exists to a certain extent, but it's not like it once was.
Right.
We have a great college radio station out here called KXLU, which is just still fabulous. And you can hear the weirdest, oddest things on that station that you would never hear anywhere else. But other than that, it's hard for people to break out of their micro bubbles.
Yeah. And do you think kind of the notion of albums is sort of breaking down as well? Like everything's really single driven and...
Yes, I do. I feel that that's exactly true. I feel we're back to the very beginning of recorded music, where there was, again, because of technological limitations, there were no albums. There were only singles.
Right.
Records couldn't hold more than 10 minutes, 5 minutes per side.
Right.
Which, I don't know if that's good or bad. I have nostalgia for albums because I grew up with albums and sequencing and the whole experience of sitting down to listen to music while doing nothing else was very seminal in my life. But obviously, you can't mourn what what's gone.
Right.
I remember when MTV first opened up, or, you know, first started broadcasting, I was kind of bummed out because I didn't want to see pictures along with the music, because yeah. I wanted to make my own pictures in my mind
right.
while I listened to the music.
Right.
And then I would see these videos of my favorite songs, and I was kind of like, oh, that's not what I was thinking. That's depressing. Or whatever the case may be.
Right.
And now I don't think people can imagine music without pictures attached to it.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, I think a lot of young people today, they get their music from YouTube because it's free, and then they get the video along with it. So it's
right.
just a different
or not.
Experience.
I mean, my favorite YouTube phenomenon is when people just take a video of the record going around. You know?
Yeah. So I don't want to take up too much of your time today, but I had one last question. What is it like performing and recording as part of Information Society today when you've got, I assume most of your income is coming from, you know, your work in film and television and all that. So mm-hmm. does that give you more of a sense of freedom to really kind of do what you want to do?
It does to a certain extent. I mean, on the other hand, we are a little bit constricted by our own legacy,
mm-hmm.
As all groups are, I guess, that have a history. But, you know, as Kurt and I were just discussing with each other the other day, the fact that we're not dependent on the band as our primary career and mm-hmm. income source and also sort of identity
right.
takes a lot of the pressure off. So
yeah.
we bicker a lot less because it's not so important and it's not, you know, every little thing is quite so critical.
Right, right.
You know, other than that, we're still the same people. We're still the same band and... I think that the underlying dynamics of who we are and what we do together are probably not ever going to change.
Right. Cool. Well, thanks so much for taking the time to talk to me today. And I'm really looking forward to seeing you guys play tomorrow night. It'll be exciting. Well, so
thanks very much. It was my pleasure to talk with you. And, I'm sure I'll bump into you tomorrow night.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks so much.
Okay, cool.
Thank you for listening to our program, Rock Talk. For the latest gig archives, articles, and features about popular music and concert events around the world, please visit us online at www.rocksubculture.com.
Even say Moose Busters.